The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Old Dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's show is Ask Bill. This is our regular Fun Fact Friday Ask Bill episode, where I answer specific real estate investing questions received during the month from emails, in-person conversations, phone calls, or through online portals such as BiggerPockets.com and Quora. Now, one of the goals here at the Old Dogs REI Network is to help educate and encourage fellow real estate investors to share what knowledge we have, have by answering your questions and to help others to broaden their understanding of real estate investing and to hopefully avoid some of the mistakes that can cost you later. So as we get going here on our show, we haven't done an Ask Bill for a while. And that's because I really, you know, I'd like to kind of, you know, compile some questions, and when I see some that are really relevant, I think might be good ones to have, we jump on those. Plus, we've had a lot of other sort of special topic types of Fun Fact Fridays that were a little bit more time sensitive, so wanted to do that. But before I jump right in here, I just wanted to touch base with you guys and see how you guys are doing. Hopefully, you're doing good, taking the summer to enjoy time with family and friends, and maybe even, you know, get some chance to check out some properties around. I'm hoping you're doing well. If you have any questions, I encourage you to ask here. We'll answer it on this show, or I'll email you or talk to you in person, but always happy to help out any way we can. We are actively looking, and as we continue to look for multifamily properties, we do find properties. Sometimes we take them right into contract. Sometimes we just do an LOI. But as we find those of you that happen to have an interest in investing through the syndication being a joint venture partner or something along those lines, we always like to hear from you. We can't always publicly announce these properties because it may depend on the type of syndication we do. Sometimes it can only be with people that we know. So if you are a person that is interested in getting on our investor list, I always send out a quick little note to folks that say, hey, love to talk to you. And that's the beginning of a relationship that would allow us to share those products with you as they come up. Let us know if you're interested in investing. We'd always love to have you. If you have any questions on that, I'd also be happy to receive those questions and respond. Well, let's jump into our Ask Bill segment here. This is a question, I think it might take the whole show, but we'll see. It's a two-parter, and it's from a guy named James, and James is very nice to say he always loves the show and the folks we interview and the info we give. Here are his questions. Okay, the first one is, when you have made an offer for a property that is announced as is, okay, so the property, they're saying you buy this as is, but you have a home inspection can the inspection results still be used to withdraw an offer? Or is it you knew it was as is, so you're stuck, you've got to buy it? Okay, basically is what he's saying. The second question, he says, one thing that's holding me back is, and I assume he's talking about real estate investing, is the protection of my primary residence. Best practice is to put rental properties in an entity of some type, LLC, but that may not be an option in the beginning. So I'd like to know strategies on protecting my primary residence. I have read that personal residences can be put in some types of trusts and not triggered due on sale, but I don't know how accurate that is or how well that would shield the personal residence from any negative action, lawsuits, etc., from a rental property in your personal name. Okay. So we've got two good questions here with kind of multiple parts. But let me first talk about the as-is property. First off, I would always be cautious to buy an as-is property. But you've got to know, if even if it says as-is, doesn't mean if you find out there's something wrong with it that you necessarily have to buy it, right? So let's go a little bit into that. Okay, so first off, if you do an as-is property, I would definitely hire a home inspector. So I think that's a good move. Okay. I would do it a little differently. Instead of getting it under contract, you know, you may want to do an LOI or something like that. First thing I would do is consider hiring a home inspector to inspect the property before you sign a purchase contract. Okay. So you maybe want to get an LOI or put a little deposit down or something to hold the property. But you want to find out why it's an as-is property first. For example, you may find that the repairs needed to make the home habitable may be too expensive and will likely have an adverse effect on securing the financing as well. Okay, so those are two really important things. One, it may be really costly for you, and it may not make sense based on the price of the home. And you're going to have trouble finding a bank that's going to want to get behind that. Okay, so the cost of a home inspection is money well spent. And generally, you know, I've heard, you know, there's all different rates, but basically, say $100 per 1,000 square feet or something of that nature, it's worth the investment. If you do sign a purchase contract prior to your inspection, consider using the purchase contract that in such a way that it gives you an out. Okay, from having to purchase that home. So if you have that purchase contract, you can put in there an addendum or some sort of an allowance that would say if repairs would exceed $2,000 or so, then I have the choice to bow out of the deal or not, basically. That's real legal information there. But anyway, at that point, you might be able to negotiate or put other options in there. But before you sign a contract, you want to make sure you've got an out, especially if it's an as-is. Again, I wouldn't look at an as-is unless I've had an inspection first and I know exactly what's there, and hopefully the seller will disclose why it's as is. Purchasing a home in an as is condition requires special attention, especially when it comes to financing it. You have to really recognize the fact that in buying that home, you may forfeit conventional types of lending opportunities, and that could be, you know, unless you've got cash and you're just willing to throw it in and you're ready to do whatever rehab is necessary. Before you sign a purchase contract for a home in as-is condition, you should consider getting all the facts up front, especially on how a home purchased in an as-is condition directly affects your loan approval. Find out from your bank or mortgage company that what is acceptable in terms of a condition for them to finance it. Again, most banks and mortgage lenders will require all necessary repairs to be completed prior to the loan closing. If the repairs are extensive, you may want to discuss this with your real estate professional, as the sale of the property could hinge on the repairs being completed. Now, the loan approval from your bank to finance it is important. If you're buying it in cash, then it's not as big an issue. But you know, that's an important factor, especially if you're looking down the road actually refinancing. When a buyer first makes application for a mortgage loan, it's critically important that they inform their loan officer what their intentions are in terms of the types of homes they intend to purchase. Your loan officer can address what types and conditions of homes are acceptable to their lending guidelines. Homes in serious disrepair are less likely to get approval from most banks. Several mortgage lenders will likely consider financing a home in need of repairs, provided the escrows are set up to ensure vendors and contractors are compensated once the necessary repairs are made. So just to summarize, don't sign a contract, a sales contract, if you're buying an as-is home. I would do the inspection first. You might want to work out some sort of deposit or that you'll get back after the inspection. But that's the best way to go. And then you can assess whether or not it's worth it with the repairs that you have to make. If you have already, maybe you started the contract process or you're under contract. If you do a contract or that's the only way you're going to hold the property, then you build in some sort of a contingency or a clause in there that will allow you, let's say if the expenses exceed $2,000 or whatever your number is, then that gives you the out. Okay. So let's go back to our questions again. Let's look at the second question. And again, he's concerned about the protection of his primary residence. Okay. What kinds of things do you need to do to sort of protect your residence? And I'll say first, before I even get started, one, this is a very good question. But I'll say first the big disclaimer, I'm not an attorney, a CPA, or an insurance broker. And to get the best answers, you need to contact a reliable attorney, CPA, or insurance person. And I added insurance person in there because I think that's an important element here. The reality is we live in a litigious world, and unfortunately too many people look for every opportunity to sue or extract money from people, especially landlords and property owners. And they may find it over the littlest things, okay? Now I will say up front here too, this is really important, that we need to do everything we can as a landlord, as a property owner, to prevent any kind of problem, safety, injury that could happen to the people living in our properties. That is your responsibility. So if it's a legitimate claim, I'm not saying they're all frivolous, or I'm just saying that sometimes you do have the frivolous ones, and you just want to make sure that you have the right protections in place. Okay. So if you want to be a successful real estate investor, you need to put together a team of experts that will help prevent you from losing everything you've got, right? And the few key members you need right up front before you get started here is a top-notch real estate attorney, okay? We talked about this. We had a show on teams recently, and this is probably one of your most critical members. It should be someone who can review all your legal documents, give you solid counsel, and someone who is watching out for your well-being and protection. And they got to know their stuff in terms of real estate, obviously. Another key person is an estate attorney, and I'll explain why, but this is an attorney that can help you to organize all of your personal assets, real estate holdings, etc. And we'll get into that in just a moment. And that's primarily in the event of your death, what will happen to those properties. Next, a good CPA, a real estate CPA. I'll emphasize that, somebody who is working with real estate investors, preferably somebody who is an investor themselves, and they understand tax needs as it pertains to your real estate holdings and your personal finances. And then finally, a good insurance agent / broker who works extensively with real estate investors. Now, a good insurance person can prevent you from getting hit by these frivolous lawsuits. And a good insurance agent will give you a policy and the protections that it doesn't even have to go to your attorney. You don't have to pay the attorney's fees to deal with, because they'll handle it all at their level. So let's talk a little bit about, okay, so that I mentioned the right team is crucial. And there's a lot more team members, and I would recommend listening to that show that we did on putting a team together. There'll be a link in the show notes here if you missed it. So what is the structure, okay, to protect your personal residence, as you were talking about, okay? First thing I would recommend, and again, I'm not a professional. This is what I do, and I'm only sharing this because I think that this works well for me. First thing is to set up a living trust. This is something that you set up that ensures all your personal assets, including your real estate holdings, will be distributed in the event of, let's say, your death or the death of your wife or whatever that may be, or whoever else you designate on your in your living trust. It also includes an actual will that's in there that talks about the distribution of your assets in the event of your death. This is a great tool because it really protects your assets from really going into probate, which will happen if there isn't a will or some other, if there's a will in place. I think the living trust, and again, I'm not an attorney, so I'm sure you attorneys, you can write in the comment section of this anything that I do wrong. Okay, so just a little, again, back to the disclaimer part of it. But, you know, the living trust, I live in California. Estate taxes are ridiculous here. And as a result, you know, I mean, I've heard stories about people losing, you know, 50% of their, their assets that go to the state of California. And so you just want to make sure that you have a protection vehicle that does, should something happen to you, it will go directly to the people in your will. Okay. It won't go into the state. The state won't have to, you know, decide where these funds are going to go. It goes directly to the people that you love and care about that you want to inherit these things. Okay. So you've got the living trust. Okay, then I would set up what I call a holding LLC. Again, I'm not using necessarily legal terminology here, but I'm trying to do it in the best way that makes sense and people can understand. Okay, because I'm an out-of-state investor. Okay, I have multiple LLCs. And those LLCs are basically in my holding LLC. Okay, so they are listed as... basically, the owner of each of those LLCs is my holding LLC. Okay, I'm trying to explain it as best I can. The holding LLC that I have is in Wyoming. Okay, it's Wyoming. Say that three times real fast. Wyoming. Okay, is because Wyoming is one of those states, like Nevada, and I think also Delaware, maybe some others, where you do not have to list your name anywhere in the LLC. Okay, so in other words, it'd be like an anonymous owned LLC. Now, of course, you have designated representatives that can handle your business that are local people in those states that are you basically pay to be sort of your representative, but nobody has to disclose who you are in that process. Okay, so let's take another step. Okay, so the LLCs in each state, okay, for example, I personally have one for each state, and it'll be, the name of the state will be in there, for example, Tennessee Properties Group LLC or something like that. That LLC could hold other LLCs, or some people will do, and I don't know a lot about these, but they'll do like land trusts, which they, instead of having all these LLCs, they'll have land trusts that go into that one LLC in that state. I don't know about that. I don't do that. So basically what I do is if they're smaller properties, I'll have all of those properties go into the LLC. So what does that mean? It means that the deeds for those properties will list the name of that LLC. And it may say, the LLC owns the property. So if somebody, has a problem in a property and something happens, they will try to find out who the owner of the property is, and they'll find out the owner is an LLC. Okay. With apartments and larger properties, you might want to definitely get a separate LLC because I'll explain to you why. But basically, what happens is, let's say somebody at that apartment slips and they hurt themselves and they want to sue you. They will go to that LLC that owns that apartment, and that they'll find out that apartment is owned by your state LLC. Okay, I hope this all makes sense. But basically, that they're, if they're going to really go for the gusto and try to sue, the most are going to get is that apartment or that property, okay? And then let me go to the last one, and that is insurance policies, okay? Really, really important. One, you always got to make sure you've got a comprehensive insurance policy that will well cover your property from all kinds of things, fires, floods, earthquakes, vandalism, whatever it may be, and that that you're taken care of should anything happen to your property. Equally as important is what I call, or it's what the insurance industry calls, an umbrella policy. And that's what protects you from those frivolous lawsuits, okay? And it's what I call sort of the first line of defense. And I would recommend, you know, a minimum policy of $1 million or preferably $2 million. They're not that expensive. So, but they will cover lawsuits up to those amounts. So let's take this all into the big picture here, okay? Again, if I said anything wrong or whatever, I want to make sure that you guys know that I'm not an attorney, okay? But this is basically why I set up what I set up. Let me give you a scenario so you can kind of understand how it might work, okay? So let's say you have one of your tenants, okay, slips and they hurt themselves, okay? Maybe it was icy outside or on the sidewalk, and they said, well, you should have put salt on there, but it was like in the middle of the night that the ice came on and you didn't have time to get salt or whatever it may be. But basically, they're going for the jugular here. They find a personal injury attorney and they want to sue. They want to get some money out of it. So because they maybe they broke their arm or something when they fell. What they'll normally do is go to, let's say, the property manager, and they'll say, we want to find out the tenant's name because have a potential lawsuit or whatever they may say. Sometimes they'll be, if it's an attorney calling, they probably won't tell you that they've got a lawsuit going. They just may call and say, I'm interested in buying your building. Could you give me the name of the owner? You know, they'll do anything they can to find out who owns the property. But a good property management person would know that they never disclose the owner of the property, okay? So what they will say, though, is that it is owned by an LLC, okay? And you can just look that up in the county records. And they'll go to the county records and they'll see it's owned by an LLC. What they also do, and, again, it depends on the attorney. I don't want to paint all attorneys as, not good people. But there will be those attorneys that, will just kind of, they're just out for the money. And they're just concerned about how can they get that, get some money for their client and get a percentage of it for themselves, or, get their fees covered. And so they might just actually try to find out the name of the insurance company. And, I don't have a problem with my, property managers disclosing the name of the insurance company, and the insurance company, of course, doesn't disclose that I'm the owner. So what happens is that it kind of moves into a cycle here where it gets into the insurance company, and they're used to dealing with this stuff all the time. They hate to spend money. That's how they make their money, is they hate to make, to have to pay off claims, but they're equipped to do it. And they can really get to the heart of it. And if it's really frivolous and it's fruitless, they're going to say, you're not going to get anywhere on this. If you want to take it to court, you can take it to court, or whatever they may say. Or they might just have a settlement amount that'll be, $500 or a small amount or something. The tenant's happy, they get their money, the attorney gets their money, and that's the end of it. It doesn't go to court, doesn't go to the attorneys, they don't have to deal with it. But if you have somebody that isn't satisfied with that, they're not satisfied with the insurance, and they try to investigate, they'll look up in the county records, they'll see the LLC, the name of the LLC, they'll try to find out who owns that LLC. What they're going to find out is that it's owned by another LLC. And that LLC may be owned by another LLC. And they're ultimately going to end up getting to a place where they can't get a name, because these LLCs basically keep pointing to the one holding LLC in Wyoming where there is no name tied to it. Okay. So the idea there, and I talk about the living trust, is that your living trust owns this Wyoming LLC and basically everything under it. So your personal assets are protected and covered in that, that whole funnel that's there. That, first off, if they can, let's say they they find out the property, they're going to sue the LLC. They may get that property maybe even get to the second level and get that property. And they may try to go as far as they can get, but there's a certain point where it just isn't worth it anymore. And unless it's, something, they've got a team of lawyers and these people are paying all kinds of money to dig and find all this information, generally it'll discourage lawsuits. And that's basically the way it works, is that it usually, and I've had tenants that tried to sue and they went to the insurance company, they got their money, and it usually stops there. 9 times out of 10, that's all they're looking for is some cash. Again, this is my own, what I do. Some other people will have totally different approaches. Some people do DSTs, the Delaware Statutory Trust. As I mentioned, there are folks that work really heavily with land trusts and so forth. So there are a lot of different ways to do this. Now, if you're looking at this and you're thinking, oh my goodness, this is, sounds like this is going to be very expensive to do. And, it doesn't have to be. I would say you need a good attorney and a good attorney to set these things up properly. But if your budget's an issue, you can also do all these things, the LLCs and the living trusts through, even at LegalZoom.com. And I don't really recommend a lot of the sort of turnkey online type legal things, but LegalZoom, I've done stuff with LegalZoom. They're good, they're reliable, trustworthy, and they do good work. It's always better, though, to have a personal attorney that knows your situation up front. That's basically the answer there. I would, to find good attorneys and folks that would be helpful, as well as insurance and CPA people. I always go to like bigger pocket forums and start asking around for people in the states where you're involved or in your local area. You can also talk to other fellow investors, local REA meeting, REA meetings or meetups, those types of things. You can make contacts with folks. I will also have, we've talked about asset protection and pretty extensively in some of our podcasts. Had some great attorneys, including Garrett Sutton, who's Robert Kiyosaki's attorney, that will talk about these things. And I'm going to put some links to some of those shows so that you can get a little bit more detail, again, on the asset protection side of things. Well, that's it for today. Please note, Old Dog listeners, everything presented here can be accessed in our show notes. And there will be some links here that'll be helpful for you, as well as a summary of the things that we discussed today. Just look for the most current Ask Bill episode and you'll find the show notes for the show. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.